This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is Beth Wood.
Get down low, lower than you thought you could go, among the wreckage and the ruin, and look around real slow. Can you feel nothing more than you do now? Oh, whiskey, how could I let it come to this? I am leaning on you heavy, missing all the things I miss. And love is gone, it's just you and me now. More than let me down, nice and easy. Whiskey.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking today with Beth Wood. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Great to have a chance to talk shop with you here on Musician Spotlight. Beth is from Eugene, Oregon. Well, not originally. We're actually going to talk a little bit more about where you're from originally, but presently resides in Eugene, Oregon. And her most recent recording is Sometimes Love. We're going to be featuring some music from that and talking a little bit about that, as well as general Beth Wood things. Let's start in Lubbock, since that's where you started.
Okay. Well, Lubbock, Texas is actually a really great place to grow up. It's a college town. It's not too big, not too small, and it's in the panhandle of Texas. Lots of wide open spaces, as Susan Gibson says in her song. Musically speaking, I grew up listening to my dad's record collection, which he listened to Willie Nelson and Bread and Flying Burrito Brothers and John Denver. And then my mom listened to classical music. And I also grew up with my brother's 8-track tapes of, you know, rock bands. Nice. Like Heart and things like that, Foreigner. So I had kind of a mishmash. I grew up playing piano and classical and violin and singing in choir and stuff like that.
And am I correct that your studies in classical music got you out of Lubbock?
Yes.
And headed across to the other part of the country, the eastern part of the country.
The eastern part.
And that it was later on that you really started writing your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, I always wrote when I was a kid. I always had a journal and I wrote poems and all this. And I always was a writer, but I didn't really start writing songs per se until after I quit this music program. And I was floundering a bit. And and for the first time in my life, I didn't have access to a piano. I didn't own one. I lived in a crappy apartment. And so I went and got a used guitar. And that kind of became my outlet, teaching myself guitar and then writing songs on that. Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about something that a lot of people think sometimes that with singer-songwriters, that it's just a matter of, you mentioned that you did a lot of journaling.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people think it's just a matter of just opening up your journal and grabbing some stuff and then putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, mm-hmm. it can be, mm-hmm. To some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that kind of early, just being able to, express yourself in words, does that help kind of set a path to make it a little bit easier to try to put those into a craft?
I think so. Absolutely. Because it becomes kind of a practice for me, I'm a really sensitive, tender person. And so I had to have a way to express some these things. And so as a kid, I would just write. And that becomes a part of how you, in your life, how you process things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, sometimes it happens that I open up my journal and I pluck something out of it and it becomes a song. But really, the journaling and just the writing practice is more of like, a constant stream. The songwriting process to me and everyone else is mysterious. You never know how or when or where it's going to happen. But I believe if you keep this practice going, that it keeps things moving. Yeah.
Today the world feels so heavy.
Beth, I wanted to talk to you about your most recent project, Sometimes Love, and specifically how this came about, because if I'm not mistaken, this is not your standard way of putting an album together.
Right.
Yeah.
People are getting really creative
nowadays. Song
of
the Month Club. Yeah, yes. Let's talk about that a little bit.
So, you know, the kind of the old model of how music, quote unquote, music business works is kind of like disintegrating it. And people are getting super creative and how to make this happen. And it's not cheap to make an album, but it's also gotten a lot less expensive than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people have done crowdfunding campaigns, and I did one myself for a couple albums ago. And I was trying to think, how can I, you know, A, raise money for my next project, and B, make it something that engages people and shares a little bit more of a window into what I do. And so I came up with this Song of the Month Club. And part of it was because the producer that I worked with, Tyler Fortier, he and I came up with this system of tackling one song at a time, which is different than how you normally record an album. Mm-hmm. And it just because of logistically, because I travel a lot, and just because of that's the way he was working at the time, that's how we tackled it. And so we would come, and then we would finish this one song, and I'd be, ooh, I'm so excited, I want to share this. So I came up with this Song of the Month Club, and basically people could, I asked for a minimum of $10. People could pay more. Mm-hmm. And it would be one song every month for 10 months. And it could be in any stage of production. Like a couple of songs I sent out were just totally acoustic. A lot of them were fully produced. And then I'd send a sheet with the lyrics, and also talk about the origin of the song and talk about why we did certain production things. It was really fun.
So if I'm following correctly, it was almost like a subscription service.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then supporters would contribute, and in response, you would give them a song of the month.
Yes.
Was that taxing to be able to?
It was a lot of work. Yeah. It's funny how quickly, like, the first of the month sneaks up on you. Yeah, because it was a lot of work, but I loved it. And I'm actually considering doing it again, just because it's such a cool way to get new music out there. You know, it might be a while before I can do another album, but I can do this.
One of the things I was going to ask you about was just the concept of, and this can relate to this project, but also be generalized too, the concept of sharing and how much of yourself you are willing to share with, particularly with, you know, the singer-songwriter genre. It seems like it's one that generally people connect with on a very intimate level. Mm-hmm. The audience tends to want to share or get more from the artist, maybe, or share an intimacy with an artist that maybe they don't with a band. Mm-hmm. How do you wrestle with that, in particular with a project like this, where that's kind of part of what you're trying to put out, is giving a little bit more of yourself in the whole experience? Does that make sense?
It does. It is a very fine line. And I'm kind of a private person, so sometimes it's an interesting line to walk. But what I loved about this was getting to really delve into where these songs came from, what was the spark, how did they develop, why did they develop, those kinds of things I love talking about. Mm-hmm. I love sharing that, and it's so cool to me that folks are interested in that. And I think you can... You know, sharing a little bit more about that part of yourself helps people connect with your music, and not necessarily sharing, you know, all the dramatic details of your life.
So heavy I can't breathe. There's a mile.
Beth, I had a chance to see you perform live for the first time as we were recording this interview. And I think, you know, I was familiar with your music through your recordings, seen some videos, but I was not prepared for the amount of energy and the kind of presence you have on stage. It's pretty dramatic.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to ask, at what point did you realize your confidence on stage? You know, and be comfortable in your skin as a performer, because your presence on the stage is such that it gives the impression that you just hatched onto the stage like that.
That's really funny. Yeah. I think I've always felt pretty confident as a performer of music. What was really hard for me to learn how to do is talk in between songs.
Really?
You know, and I mean, it sounds weird, but talk to an audience. Because, you know, I came from a background where you just walk up to the piano, you play your piece, and you walk off. Like, you don't talk. And so it was definitely a learning process that, you know, part of this experience is me talking about these songs and, you know, learning how powerful an introduction to a song can be. You know, you can change the way someone hears something by the way you introduce it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that's part of telling the story.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. And I'm speaking today with singer-songwriter Beth Wood. Beth, as we've been talking this morning, we've touched on a lot of things involved in the experience of the solo artist, the solo singer-songwriter, and the relationship with the music and also with the music and the audience. And something else that we talked about before we started the interview was the concept of just being in situations musically where people are listening on a level that they don't get a chance to engage in as much.
Right. It's absolutely remarkable. And, you know, every musician knows what a big difference it is between playing at a bar where you're kind of like background music and it's fun and stuff, but, you know, there's TVs behind your head. And then playing in a theater where there's lighting and people are seated. And it's, you could hear a pin drop. You know, it's a very different experience to sharing your music that way. And that's one of the things that I've come to love playing this kind of music is playing in those listening environments. And I find that it's absolutely transformative, not only for me, but for the audience. And part of it is the music, but it's only a very small part. I believe that it's a function of this music and those listening environments is that people are able to sit still and pay attention to each other. And that doesn't happen very often these days anymore. You know, even like, I don't know, even like married couple, you have to like carve out a place on your calendar to go out to dinner so you can sit and talk to each other. You know, like we're so busy.
And if it's not our own screens...
Right.
There are screens aimed at us.
Absolutely.
In modern Western culture anyway, almost anywhere we go.
So yeah, I think just by being together in a room and being still and being quiet and listening to each other, that's magical.
Beside the water, he is a solitary man, and I am the beachcomber's daughter. Well, he comes here day after day, collects his washed up treasures. Who am I to say what should give a man his simple pleasures? And our cup it surely overflows, but he never died when he was a baby. They barely had enough to get by. He was raised by the neighborhood ladies. They did what they could for a motherless child. And he led his company to war, where the general sent them to slaughter. He won't speak of that no more. And I am the wounded soldier's daughter. Our cup it surely overflows, but he never has learned to let any of that go. And if I'm running from my memories, well, that's just the wounded soldier in me. Well, we carry our history. It's in our blood and it's in our bones. Some may remain a mystery, but we carry it 'cause it's our own. And where the ocean meets the land, terns and pelicans skim the water. There walks a solitary man, and I am the beachcomber's daughter.
Beth, it's occurring to me that you tour around the country.
I do, yes.
And
yes.
Internationally at all?
Not yet. I would love to.
But I do know, and I remember this morning when reviewing, before we did this interview, that you have done that, is it Kayamo? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
So let's talk about that and tell listeners what this is all about, because okay. This is maybe something that doesn't come to the forefront of their minds when they think of the experience that we've been talking about of the solo singer-songwriter.
So Kayamo, or Kayamo, is a Caribbean cruise that's a week long, and it's basically a floating music festival. The festival takes over the entire ship, so it's only music lovers and musicians that are on the ship. And it's there's like 10 different stages, and then, you know, at night the headliners play like Lyle Lovett and Lucinda Williams, John Prine, Indigo Girls, you know, basically this whole long list of people that I love. and they also had like small intimate club stages, you know. So I got to play at some of those where there was 150 people, but you could hear that pin drop, you know. It was so much fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, you get to go on deck and play some shuffleboard.
Absolutely. I mean, you can do, like, during the day, you can go snorkeling and, you know, do all that stuff. So it's like, it's kind of like a vacation, but you play some music.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Beth Wood. BethWoodMusic.com is the name of Beth's website. It's an excellent website. I was looking
thank
at that over
you.
Again today, and that is a really well put together website with all kinds of information, easy to navigate, lots of content, really good content there. Sometimes Love is the most recent recording. Beth, thanks so much for being a guest on Musician Spotlight.
Thank you. Thanks for the conversation.
She had a mouth like a horseshoe turned upside down.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Beth Wood. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.